you know, I'm gonna sing. Is it sing their trumpet?
You can sing their trumpet if you like, Harriet.
This is the Media Freak Podcast. It's the latest and greatest podcast created by media people who are just a little bit freaky. We're not the big dogs. We're the ones in the media trenches who tell you how it really is. Each episode, you'll hear from us with a quick roundup of media news, our expert guests, and some anonymous sources about the freaky world of media. So who's on the mic? It's me, your host, Harriet from Publicis, Jack from Craft.
Hello.
Vicky from Wavemaker.
Hola.
And Charlie from Show Hero.
Hello.
In today's episode, we revisit Evan Shapiro's analysis of Barb data, we chat network agency acquisitions, and we discuss ad revenue growth in the broadcast TV category. But first, we'd like to talk to you about our commercial partner, Alchemy Network, the innovation consultancy that is helping agency folk to stay ahead of the game with marketing and ad tech. If you're interested in the application of technology to drive innovation, or simply want to hear from a selection of disruptive ad tech partners, Alchemy Network can bring tailored sessions to keep you sharp on emerging trends. So does anyone know the email address to contact Alchemy?
Oh my goodness, I actually should, but I don't.
Hold on. Hello at alchemynetwork.com.
No, incorrect. It's hello at alchemy-network.co.uk to learn more.
Excellent.
You are so undeserving of a commercial partnership.
Alchemy are sick, though. Has anyone had them come in recently? We had them in very recently, and they did a lot of like creative testing partners with us. It was good because they had sort of tailored it to what Craft need rather than just bringing us in a load of like, if it's just like a load of programmatic stuff, we don't really tend to buy. So they tailored it for us, which I thought was really good.
Cool. Did creative testing partners, did they introduce Metrics Lab?
I don't think they did, but they sound quality.
They are good. And no, we're not sponsored by Metrics Lab. But
I was going to say, have you got a little side deal going on?
No comment. Well, anyway, yes, email hello at alchemy-network.co.uk to learn more about them. Anyway, moving on to the news this week. In network agency news, Publicis Group has recently announced that it has entered into an agreement to acquire Lotame, the world's leading independent identity solution. Have you heard about Lotame, Charlie?
Yeah, well, not so independent anymore, eh? clearly Publicis again on the sort of acquisition spree, beefing up their Epsilon sort of data power, I guess, kind of edging towards becoming a bit of a sort of walled garden alternative.
What's Epsilon data power?
Well, Epsilon, go on, Harriet, you're the Publicis queen.
Epsilon, in a nutshell, is a data-driven marketing tech company, obviously, that was acquired by Publicis in 2019, that helps businesses optimize customer engagement through digital experiences and targeted advertising. But I think what Charlie was alluding to there was that Lotame will be positioned as part of Epsilon, as I said, which was acquired by Publicis Group in 2019. And that's accessible to all Publicis clients and teams to enhance their ability to deliver personalized marketing services at scale. So, Publicis has just Pac-Man'd it up again, as you would say.
I thought you were. I was gonna make a joke about the Pac-Man thing. I was like, no, I got told off last time. Also, how do you know that? So you didn't even pause for breath.
Honestly, I'm sorry. I'm looking at you, and I was like, I've never seen you so professional. Amazing. And on the money. That was unreal.
Some
my job's on the line, guys. I need to know what I'm talking about here.
Well, one of the interesting points in there is that, like, obviously there are some non-Publicis agencies who are already have relationships with them. So, like, what happens to them? What do they just get unceremoniously booted, or what's the sort of situation there? I wonder.
What do they get ceremoniously booted? Whatever that might be.
I mean, I can't answer that, Charlie, I'm afraid. I'm assuming no clients are going to get booted. I think this
can
is just
can only imagine
going
that it would be like when you get to the end of the contract that you've currently got with them, then there might be some sort of rejigging of the agreements, or basically you know, a gun to the head, you need to come and join Publicis. Otherwise, you can't have it anymore.
Something like that. But the combined force of Lotame and Publicis Group will reportedly, in the trade press, enable clients to reach 91% of adult internet users with personalised messaging at scale.
91%. Sorry.
Yeah, quite right. Yeah.
So who are the 9% who are avoiding the eye of Sauron? They're the people who manage to who unclick all of those boxes on the website pop up every time. So basically, they've got all the data. Is that it?
They do have all the data, and it's all very exciting.
They got a lot of me data.
Yeah, and right. Got a lot of me data. That's right, Jack.
Well, we'll have to see how the other agency groups respond as well, because, you know, maybe there is a bit of tit for tat in here, and there's a few other potential acquisition partners in the firing line.
Do you know what was interesting, though? Arthur Sadoun was quoted as saying, in the age of AI, the name of the game is Connect or Die.
I know, it's so kind of apocalyptic, isn't it?
He's upping the stakes, but also, from a sort of people who work in an agency standpoint, it's a little bit like, oh, that's good. They've acquired the new data people and they're upping the AI. And so is that the kind of the knives being sharpened for when we eventually get cut out of the picture, or what's...
Well, you know, it's Publicis Group being one step ahead or five steps ahead. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm going to sing their trumpet?
You can sing their trumpet if you like, Harriet.
Praises,
I'm not
love
so blow their trumpet.
To a trumpet.
Blow it, but I can't. So anyway, right. Moving on. Yeah, well, good luck to Publicis Group for all of the above.
Always good luck, Publicis.
In the TV landscape, in one of our previous episodes, which we will link in the show notes, we discussed Evan Shapiro's analysis of BARD data, which analysed TV viewership in the first half of 2024. The analysis that he did drew considerable traction, I suppose, across the industry. And since then, Mr. Shapiro has provided another analysis of BARD data for the full year. Now, in summary, and guys, correct me if I'm incorrect here, but he has analysed in-home TV viewing as well as in-home four-screen watch time, which essentially means he's comparing when a viewer watches a video at home on one of the following screens. So that's broadcast TV, pay TV, streaming services, and social video. So he did a lot of analysing. Thank you, Jack. Charlie, why are you laughing?
No, nailed it. It's fine.
Counting to four.
we're all improving together. It's fine.
well done me for that. Anyway, so he did a lot of analysing. So Jack, I'm interested to hear what you've got to say about this. What were the key takeouts?
I think there were a few things really, and I've sort of been trying to. Well, I mean, I would encourage anyone who's interested in planning or in media more generally to read it, because it's a really good snapshot of where the world of video is right now. And obviously, it doesn't capture stuff outside of the home, but so much is watched at home that it's a pretty good a picture as we're going to get to work with. It's actually probably more just a case that the trends talked about last time have been seen to continue, and there's been no sort of real kind of veering away from them. The key thing is really, though, it's like YouTube has taken over like in a big way. And I think if I was to like to pull out a couple of really key points, he talks a lot about like children aged 4 to 15 and their viewing habits and what that will mean for planning in the future, and it kind of extrapolating that. But I suppose in the immediate term, he talks a lot about the success of Channel 4's strategy in bringing in additive audiences by moving into YouTube and putting kind of full length content on there. And YouTube are saying that a lot of their content comes from a lot of their viewership, comes from long form viewing now. So basically, it means that like Channel 4 and ITV now, who are following it, are starting to meet people where they actually watch, rather than just sort of hoping blindly that they will come to them, because obviously they're trying to balance older people's more entrenched viewing versus sort of a younger sort of, you know, more YouTube centric view of the world. There's a lot to get into in it, but that's probably the most important bits that I took out of it.
Yeah. Charlie, what's your view on the analysis?
Obviously interesting to see the sharp and continued shift away from the broadcasters. I mean, I was at Sky for a very long time and sort of was acutely aware of those numbers every week or every meeting. It's what is cool to see is, Jack, as you alluded to there, sort of the broadcasters embracing YouTube rather than sort of trying to battle it. And you mentioned Channel 4 there, sort of the content that's doing really well for them is the stuff that was made for TV, produced for TV, and they're now rehashing it to a new audience. So kind of quite nice and low cost, I suppose, from that point of view. But ultimately, they will have to at some point in time start feeding that library of content again. So they're going to have to figure out a way they are monetizing what's going on YouTube, so that revenue can be used towards creating new programming. But it's an interesting new world, and obviously we will inevitably draw parallels with the print world. Yeah. So, you know, print isn't dead, it's still there. TV is not going to die either, it's just going to evolve, and we'll just change the definition of TV, what TV is at the end of the day, maybe.
You say that, Charlie, but I still can't get over this stat, which is featured in the report. Among British children ages 14 to 15, aka Gen Alpha, broadcast viewing on television has fallen more than minus 30% in the last 2 years. Like, that's pretty crazy. Yeah.
It's not entirely surprising, though, is it? It's been on the slide for a long old time. Even when I was planning Lego back in like 2017, 18, there was very, very kind of little role for broadcast TV. It was all kind of YouTube then. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think is really important to take from this, though, is when you were talking about made for TV content and broadcast quality content, I think there is a sort of a divide happening in the world of YouTube. Like, the world of like, right, it's just anyone chucking anything on is kind of gone. Like, people are making much higher quality content and figuring out where you want to kind of buy your media, basically. The stuff that you want to be around is really, really important, because do you want to be alongside broadcast quality content? Do you want to be alongside content that's made for at like that kind of standard and has a lot of like craft that's got into it? Or do you want to be alongside four talking heads on a podcast that might be happening in the background, and people might not actually be watching it? Those are considerations that you actually have to have. So I think when you're listening to what YouTube tell you to do and how they want you to plan, it might be worth thinking about the third party kind of players that you can work with to, you know, improve your YouTube planning rather than just taking off the shelf advice.
Also, in when you're talking about considerations there, Jack, what we're looking at with this report is viewership. So it's who's watching what, and it's not about sort of the ads within that. And actually, when we look at, yes, YouTube have captured a significant amount of their audience, but looking at the attention that and the efficacy of adverts on there, obviously we know that TV's return on ad spend is really, really strong, and we know that YouTube at 6 seconds and 15 seconds is especially strong. But actually, if you want to have a longer campaign in your 20s and 30 seconds, actually there is really a place for TV and for other CTV perhaps and online video filling in a bit of the gaps there. We can see the audience shift, but consider what we want to do long term.
Definitely.
We encourage everyone to read the report. It is publicly accessible. It was left with a bit of a punchy closing statement, something along the lines of TV producers need to wake up and smell the coffee, basically. That's not verbatim, but the traditional road will be less and less profitable for them.
I actually really agree with that. I did see some kind of LinkedIn argy-bargy on this in the week. Some people were kind of saying, you know, oh, Channel 4 are basically selling out, they're giving up control, all that kind of stuff. And like, I looked at it and I just thought, so what? Like, if we're looking for viewership right now, I think the legacy broadcasters, as we've kind of said, will need to adapt. It's not necessarily giving up control. It's just changing where that control is and understanding that you need to move with audience consumption habits. So I think anyone who's kind of going to be really stoic on this and say, oh no, we can't go into the digital space, we are broadcast and we must remain so, I think they will struggle in the long term.
Well, I'm glad you've brought up legacy broadcasters, Buki, because that moves us on nicely to our next news segment. So,
smooth segue. Love that.
So for our international listeners, ITV is a major British broadcaster, and ITV's ad revenue grew by how much in 2024?
2%.
Yes, which sounds a little, but digital ad revenue rose by 15%, making up 26 of total ad revenue.
Yeah, it's grown to the total advertising revenue grew to 1.8 billion. So it's pretty decent. I mean, they've had a tough couple of years, and ITVX was considered by a lot to be quite a big gamble, maybe a little bit late to the party, especially when you think about how long iPlayer has been going for by comparison. And it's been a pretty big success.
And ITVX is their...
That's their streaming platform. It's their kind of the go-to. You can also buy like an ad-free version if you want, like a premium membership. But yeah, it's otherwise the standard is just free and with ads.
And I think you can actually also watch out of the country if you get the premium version. So you can get it when you go on holiday.
Ah.
I do remember that the Love Island final of a few years back, I did have to pay for the premium version for a little bit.
So a big shout out to our one listener in Bahrain. You, my friend, can get Love Island. You just have to pay the premium. But seriously, thanks for tuning in.
Well, so ITV aims for £750 million in digital revenue by 2026. But they are expecting revenue to be impacted again by the introduction of tighter ad restrictions on less healthy foods, which we've already spoken about in a previous episode, which we will also link in the show notes,
HFSS.
As well as something else, which I can't remember. There we go. Go on, Charlie, do you remember?
No, I can't remember. No, but I mean, look, as a headline, look, 2%. Doesn't sound like a lot, but actually in what is a really brutal TV market, it's pretty good. I mean, we've got Google and Meta and Amazon and Netflix and even TikTok eating just about everyone's lunch at the moment. So credit to ITV for keeping their head just above water.
Well done, ITV. More specifically, Mrs. Winter.
I was wondering, were we going to bring up the fact that my wife works for ITV? I'm chuffed, but let me tell you, we don't get too much of that 1.8 billion. So the surrounds will be remaining as unsalubrious.
Well, anyway, in the telcos category, soccer's new six-a-side Baller League has announced O2 as its headline sponsor for its UK competition. The competition is to be named Baller League UK, powered by O2. Now, I have no idea what a Baller League is. Neither do I understand the significance of this partnership. So,
at least you're honest.
I love that. Well, lucky for you, I do. So for anyone like Harriet who has absolutely no idea what the Baller League is, as she mentioned, it is a six-a-side football competition that's coming to the UK. The first iteration of it started in Germany. And essentially what makes it a little bit different is instead of, you know, your 90-minute game that you would get in a normal football match, you have 15-minute halves. So it's just a half-hour game. Players are actually paid £400 because in like a weird FA Cup style type of thing, anybody can play, but you just have to get like drafted. It also comes with rule twists being introduced at the end of games in the last 3 minutes, such as goalkeepers not being allowed to use their hands or goals from long range being counted as double. So Charlie's really added this kind of gamified elements. I know Charlie's not happy about that.
Charlie's a goalkeeper for people who are listening. He's
yeah, so it's added, it adds all this kind of gamified elements to the game of football and is digital first. So initially it was launched across the likes of Twitch and it's on YouTube. It is kind of headed up by influencers and content creators. So there's this huge kind of connection to the platforms and the spaces that younger generations are kind of showing up in. So the thing that's really significant about this, and I think it's a stroke of genius from O2, is that connection to the younger people, because sport is having a huge challenge trying to connect with younger demographics. We heard it on the Barb stuff, we heard it on the ITV Channel 4 stuff, where broadcast viewership is down in younger demographics, and sport traditionally being something that is, well, one of the last appointment to view broadcast kind of pinnacles.
Yeah,
they're struggling to connect. So O2 kind of jumping in on this, I think, have managed to unlock this audience that they've been kind of failing to reach. You have a lot of other telcos, whether it's GIFGAF, I think Voxy, they are very aimed at younger demographics. They're all about TikTok and social media. But O2 has been kind of seen as a bit of like an older brand, a bit of a legacy brand. And you see it with their sponsorship.
Is that because they've got Sean Bean doing all of their adverts?
Do they still have him?
Yeah.
You're even older than I thought. Okay. So, but they are like the headline sponsor of England Rugby, for example. Again, I wrote an article on it, I think, a couple of weeks ago. But that sponsorship in itself, quite boring. It's not really exciting in the way that younger demographics like to be entertained. You're not really pulling them in. This, I'm going to read out some of the names on the lineup.
It's for ridiculous, the management. Isn't it?
It's ridiculous. I didn't even understand how they did this. But how are you pulling out Gary Lineker, Micah Richards, John Terry, Luis Figo to be the managers of this league? And then you're also pulling in UK rappers like Dave, content creators like KSI, and all of a sudden you've created a spectacle that is drawing eyeballs across the likes of Twitch, YouTube, and even Sky Sports have signed up to be the broadcast partner, but they're not like... they're not the focus point of this. So I think as planners, we need to start thinking about, and especially planners with clients who have sports portfolios, we need to start thinking about where we're putting the money. What are we advertising around? Because if Twitch isn't on your plan, but your client has a strong kind of football focus, you might want to be rethinking some of this. So very, very exciting. I think it's revitalizing the brand. I think it's connecting them to younger demographics. And I think it's just showing that football's really, really coming on. I think we're into the next era.
It's exciting. And it's nice to see that there are going to be some opportunities that aren't behind a big paywall, basically, because that will just naturally bring it down a bit, make it a bit younger. We had my mate Chris Maples came in to talk to us about one of our brands sponsoring the league, like when it was just being set up, and everyone at work was like, I've never heard of this thing. But when you look into it, it's a really exciting opportunity. The one thing I would say, though, is I think O2 have missed a trick in not getting it called the O2 Baller League. Because I'm just thinking about the Barclays Premier League and like what that kind of did for them over a long period of time.
The whole what was the name? Sorry, it was a bit of a mouthful, wasn't it? What was it?
It was the
Baller League UK powered by O2.
Yeah. No one's calling it the Baller League powered by O2. But if you called it the O2 Baller League, I don't know. Yeah. I think there's probably.
I don't
more
know. I think chance. I actually might slightly disagree with that, but more so from a consumer point of view. Yeah. I think they like to see the brands kind of getting involved, but not necessarily taking over the entire ownership. I think if they intend to have a long relationship in this space, I think this could serve them quite well in terms of like, you know, just being cute around the edges with it, just and staying consistent with it. I don't think they need to explicitly say too much, but you know, that remains to be seen.
Loved all the chat on that one, Boots. You great job. Sorry, Charlie.
I think that there'll be quite a few people dragging the heels to accept this, right? Sort of the Luddites of the sporting world. But But then we've got previous. I mean, cricket has been through a similar evolution. I think football in its format, certainly in a sort of in the way that people consume it, has been 11-a-side for just about ever. I mean, I can't remember a time when it wasn't. But cricket did a similar thing, right? We had test matches. They were longer format. They became less watched as football has had. And they transitioned into sort of one-day internationals initially. Then it went even, which were obviously one day rather than 5 days, then into T20s, which are even shorter. And now we've got Sky you know, with the 100. So that we've got sort of sporting precedents for this kind of evolution. And actually think about it now, golf as well, Tiger Woods and his, I can't remember what it's called, but that sort of...
The Tiger League or something, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of AR type things. Some of it's on the green, and some of it, but you know, it's happening, and it's going to continue, and we have to embrace it. We don't have a choice because that's where the eyeballs are going. Barb is telling us exactly that we need to change the way that we do things and change the way that we advertise around them. So I will continue to watch 11-a-side football, but who knows? You might see me supporting perhaps John Terry's team, being a Chelsea fan. So.
I also think the last thing I'll kind of say on this is that with the way I think like traditional football, the Premier League, it's kind of like it's pricing some people out. There are certain demographics that don't feel that they can watch, because if you have to watch, you know, on Sky Sports or what's BT Sport now? I've forgotten.
TNT
Sports, TNT. All those kind of spaces, they're unable to kind of, you know, access the sport in the way that they would like to. So I think this provides an access point for them. So it could be cute, man. I'm definitely, in fact, the draft for it was now. I was a bit gutted when we said we were recording right now, because I wanted to watch the draft. But again, that's something we don't really see, especially in the UK. It's very American in that style, that kind of NFL, NBA kind of draft. So I think they're going to bring a huge like entertainment factor that's going to keep eyeballs on it for a long time.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, Boogs. That wraps up our news this week. Remember, you can have your say in any of the topics and stories we discuss on the podcast. Email us at info.tmfpod@gmail.com. That's info.tmfpod@gmail.com.
Or DM us on Instagram.
Well, yes, all that. Yeah. Well, congratulations, guys. We've gone a whole 20 minutes without Charlie doing a show heroes plug until now. So last week, we introduced an opportunity to celebrate the Game Changers. Our listeners have the opportunity to nominate an industry show hero of the month and give them the spotlight they deserve. Plus, a bottle of bubbly or a top-tier non-alcoholic alternative. So to do that and to let us know who's making waves in the industry, you can also email us with your hero of the month. Anything you want to say on that, Charlie?
It's apart from email, that it's a form. You got to use the form,
shit,
haven't you?
Sorry. Bollocks. Oh.
Leave it all in.
Time stamp.
Okay, so if you would like to know or would like to nominate someone who's making waves in the industry, then you can fill in the form that can be found in the show notes. Charlie, anything you'd like to say on behalf of Show Heroes?
Well, we've had a good few submissions in, but the one thing to remember is it's totally random. So please feel free to keep popping them in. We will spin the wheel or take the thing out the hat. We've still not figured that bit out yet. And yeah, everyone has a chance to win.
I thought we were supposed to pick our favourite, but okay, it's
no, no, it's a big random lottery.
Right, got you. Totally random. Okay, moving on to our Freak of the Week. So every episode, one of us will talk about a campaign or an activation and will be tasked with justifying why it should be crowned the Freak of the Week. So this week, we have Tesco's Shrove Tuesday Pancake Day ad. What was the name? Sorry.
Shrove Tuesday.
I just can't do it, can I? I just can't.
Pancake Day.
Tesco Pancake Day. Yes. So could someone please describe the creative execution of the ad for our listeners, please?
So it was dead simple. It followed their kind of new, quite stripped back kind of visuals, but they flipped it upside down. So the words are upside down in the way that you would flip a pancake, there's a real kind of simplicity to the idea, which I really liked. And it ran across out of home and also in print. And there were two reasons that I really liked this. One, I'm a big fan of when brands use traditional media in a way that's clearly intended for it to travel online, rather than it being just about the, you know, the people who walk past it in the street or the people who see it in the paper. Because let's face it, that's not as many as can be reached if it really kind of catches fire online. And the other reason that I really liked it, I can't actually remember. I think it was just the fact that I thought it was cool.
I was going to say,
I like pancakes.
You just love a bit of Thomas planning. You love a bit of clever copywriting. So I think that's probably why you enjoyed it.
The only thing that I would say about it, and I know I'm supposed to be making the case for it, is I kind of wish that they had found a channel that they could actually flip upside down. Like in the print version, like, could they have had that page of the paper printed upside down or something, so that you have to turn it round? Or like, could the I think it ran along the bottom of the page. Like, could that be at the top of the page upside down, so it looks upside down? Mm. I don't know. That's what I would have wanted to do with it.
So does anyone have any thoughts on this? I do have a thought. It reminded me of the Lidl jacket vibe. Lidl jacket ad? One of the Oasis brothers, you know, the Lidl, obviously the supermarket.
Oh yeah.
Berghaus, the clothes brand.
Liam Gallagher.
Yes, yeah, that's
Liam. It. Liam Oasis.
Correct. Yes, Liam Oasis. Lidl brought out. Berghaus has a jacket in the Lidl colours, and then Lidl puts this out of home thing out with Lidl jacket in the Lidl colours with the jacket potato. I thought that was a little bit more clever than just putting some copy upside down. So my thoughts are, yes, I like the pancake day stuff. Yes, I thought it was good, but I don't think, wow, that's why I'm in advertising.
I bet you're a lemon and sugar person, aren't you?
I'm a Nutella, actually.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, I am a lemon and sugar person, and I could not agree more with Harriet. It was a clever... It went, that's kind of funny. I get it. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking. So for me, it's not given Freak of the Week, I'm afraid.
Not freaky enough. What about you, Charlie? No.
I'm a little bit torn because I've liked their outdoor stuff that they did previously, where they kind of replaced all the letters of Tesco with... like products that began with a T and then an E and stuff like that. I preferred that more. I thought that was a bit more creative, but I did like the sort of quick execution on a specific day. But I think I'm going to have to side with the girls on this one. No freaky.
Oh my God. So I've had like a full scale. He's skied the penalty. It's not even stayed in the stadium. It's bouncing in the car park.
I'm very sorry, Jack. Who's in the, who's winning at the moment with Freak of the Week?
I reckon it's me now.
Oh, what's the bookies just made up? The fact that's like some baller league.
Yeah, I reckon ever since you skied this one, I think I'm in the lead.
Okay, cool. Well, that remains to be seen how long that continues for.
Well, there we go. Thank you, guys. Well, that wraps up this week. Thank you so much for listening to the Media Freak podcast. If you like listening to our Freak this week, remember to like, subscribe, and tell all your friends. Media Not Anon will be back next week. And if you'd like to nominate a show hero of the month, fill in the form in the show notes. You can also email hello@lv-network.co.uk to find out more about them and their discovery program. That wraps it up. Goodbye.